And this applies to the North Koreans. It goes back to 1956. That was a time when Khrushchev denounced Stalin, and there was a lot of talk about possibly some kind of liberalization in Eastern Europe. But then Hungary, in the judgment of Khrushchev and also Mao, went too far. They wanted to leave the Warsaw Pact, so Russia invaded. Now, it so happened that before then, a number of East European leaders who were thought of as, if you like, little Stalins, had been replaced. And Peng Dehuai, who was then still a marshal of the Chinese army, and Mikoyan, who was a very senior political bureau member of the Soviet Union, came to Pyongyang to tell Kim Il-sung he could no longer carry on that way. But as they were there, the Hungarian event turned and Khrushchev's armies had intervened. So the emissaries from Russia and from China withdrew. Kim Il-sung was then able to execute all those who were pressing for reform within Korea. And from then on, he was balancing off Korea, or rather China and Russia. And in a way now, he is balancing off China, the United States, and maybe Russia, Japan too. Japan he's ignoring for now, but he knows that the Japanese want to reach out to him. So North Korea has survived through these kinds of measures. And the South Koreans also don't want to be entirely in the American camp, but they have no alternative. And as they have seen, the price to pay for not going along with the Americans in everything is not too high. President Moon would love to be in a situation in which he can be the one who introduces Kim and Trump once again to each other. But they don't need him, so he's in difficulties. And meanwhile, historical grievances have reoccurred between Japan and Korea. And the Japanese look down on Korea, and the Koreans are very angry with Japan. So it's a very difficult, complex issue. But so far, the South Koreans and the Japanese want to cling on to the alliance with America. I'm sure the Chinese would love to break it, but they haven't been able to do it because the Chinese are not trusted. And what do the Chinese want? They want their neighbors to defer to them and to do it automatically so that without thinking about it, they will not do something that the Chinese don't want. It's not that the Chinese want to dominate them and rule them. The Chinese just want them to defer to China, to accept that China is the top dog and that Chinese authority counts. Or the question about China and Pakistan and international order. The Chinese don't follow their own rules. I mean, for example, the Chinese say that no foreign armed vessel can enter into their exclusive economic zone without getting Chinese permission first. Now, the Chinese don't do that on the waters of Hawaii, nor do they do it over Alaska. So they don't follow their own rules. They do talk about some future, which is a bit vague, about mankind having a common destiny. And Chinese obviously think of themselves as second to nobody. But that doesn't mean to say that they have a vision of an international order. As far as Pakistan is concerned, I mean, for Pakistan for a long time, has been seen as a card against India. And at the same time, they want Pakistan to be viable. After all, they're pouring in, was it 20 billion?
35
billion dollars into Pakistan. A lot of it was for route to get to the Indian Ocean, but they want Pakistan to be reasonably successful. So they'll put money into agriculture, they are putting money into power plants and so on and so forth. And they've been consistent on that. It would have happened regardless of the bridge and road.
That actually, on that point, reminds me, you were saying about scale of the United States versus China, that China is putting so much money into Pakistan, but let's remember the United States is spending $55 billion a year in Afghanistan, which is now a forgotten war, and kind of a rounding error in the U.S. budget. I am cognizant that we are over time. I'd like to thank everybody for attending today. I'm sure Michael would be more than happy to take any individual questions you might have at the end here. But as a last pitch, the International Politics of the Asia Pacific, the revised fourth edition, on sale on the table out there. It's a wonderful book. And also, please remember to tweet and Instagram about us by 2 p.m. Good things to say, and we will be having the raffle and informing you if you win your very own signed copy dated today. So thank you, everyone, for coming today, and please join me in thanking Professor Levine.